Hello, welcome back to the Progression Podcast, Episode 2. Lovely to have you with me. I'm watching the sunset from my desk at the moment in New Zealand. Beautiful, beautiful afternoon out there. It's super still, like no wind. I literally can't see one of the trees rustling even slightly. It's ridiculous. Anyway, topic for this podcast is it's going to be a little bit about kind of my experience so far with the medical industry, trips to the hospital, and dealing with doctors and things like that. And it's kind of going to be how drug companies, how they influence the medical industry and how you're treated and how you're looked after, if that makes sense. And before I get into all this, I want to say a couple things. And the first is that this is my take on anything, on everything, and this is my personal, you know, my point of views and how I see things. And I'm not expecting that you should you know, take that as the final word. Of course, do your own research, and I'm not expecting you to believe everything I say either. It's just sort of it's a point of view thing, isn't it? It's sometimes just interesting to hear other people's perspective on things. And also, it might sound a little bit like I'm against the medical system in this podcast, but before I start, I just want to kind of declare that I'm definitely not against modern medicine. I've had my fair share of surgeries so far. I've had my appendix taken out. I've had a heart operation to fix a heart condition I was born with. And recently, the one that I talked about in the first podcast is that I've had my knee, the pieces of smashed kneecap sort of tied together with wire and such. And of course, I'm just super grateful to those surgeons who have made kind of my life possible, I guess, because I reckon if I lived in America, I'd be dead because of the heart condition, or I'd be in a ridiculous amount of debt at the age of 22. I'm also very aware of how lucky I am to live in a country where medical care is free, and I have the supports around me. Definitely shouldn't be taken for granted. So yeah, of course I do think that the modern medicine does incredible things and can really help people, as I have experienced in my own life. It's just that I've kind of come to be aware of a serious sort of lack of awareness or genuine care or seriously good advice, and it's made me want to do a bit of research about the medical system and find out what the fuck's going on. And the first thing I found out when I started researching this was that the world's biggest pharmaceutical companies spend a lot more on marketing and advertising towards doctors than consumers. And I was scratching my head because it kind of seems backwards at first, but then you think about the fact that doctors are, you know, the biggest drug sellers in the world. They're drug dealers. Like they're literally like your curbside hoodie wearing drug dealer, except they've been to uni and learned how to hustle in a legal fashion through a highly respected industry, and they're like, their drug lord or boss man is who they're doing the deals for, is the pharmaceutical companies. It's just a bit ridiculous when you think about it, eh? Like, how is that allowed? How is that legal? And there's serious drugs too. Like, there's fucking serious drugs. I was on tramadol for a couple of weeks after my surgery just recently, and it was insane. In New Zealand, marijuana is still illegal, and there's talk about that changing in the future for my non-New Zealand listeners, but no, tramadol, no worries, that's legal as, prescribe it up. You know, like, they sent me home with a mountain of the stuff, And even though I was taking it moderately and only when I needed the pain relief, I was still seriously acting like a drug addict. I had itchy skin. I was having panic attacks, like fucking convulsions. I was sweating, hyperventilating, like a whole heap of mad stuff like that. At one stage, my mum had to literally sit next to me and tap me on the hand when I was in hospital to prompt me, you know, to take the next breath, because I was just forgetting to breathe, and we didn't know what was going on until, you know, we did a quick Google on the side effects of tramadol, and we're just sitting there reading this list of things, going, "What the fuck?" You know, I'll read. I've pulled up the side effects here in front of me: noisy breathing, sighing, shallow breathing, a slow heart rate or weak pulse, lightheaded, like you might pass out, seizure, convulsions, missed menstrual periods, impotence, sexual problems, nausea, vomiting, loss of appetite, dizziness, worsening tiredness, headache, drowsiness, constipation, diarrhea, nausea, just the list goes on. One of them, like the most shocking one to me, was suicidal, you know, thoughts or tendencies. So I'm sitting here like, I'm being handed this drug legally, and one of the side effects is, you know, one of the risks is suicidal tendencies. The other thing is that we read online that you shouldn't be given the drug if you've previously had suicidal thoughts or tendencies. And at no stage did any of the nurses or doctors, you know, say to me like, you know, check in with me about that. Like, I was just sitting there thinking, if I was in a different position and was having serious troubles with my mental health, do you not think it's a bit neglectful to not check in with the person if that's a serious risk? Like, if the tramadol's gonna increase suicidal tendencies, then yeah, man, I just couldn't believe it. So after all this, of course, I'm just there wondering, how on earth is this legal? Everything was totally unmonitored as well. They were sort of spoon feeding me this pile of drugs and not monitoring my reactions or how it, what effect that's having on my body. Like, nothing. Actually, to give you guys a little bit of background, I've sort of grown up with food being such an important part of maintaining good health. Like, if I'm sick these days, I'll increase my intake of superfoods, like flipping, you know, garlic and dark leafy greens. And I guess the relationship between food and health is such a prominent sort of part of the way that I live my life. And therefore, every time that I'm forced to go to the hospital, I'm always kind of blown away by the fact that not once do they ever give you any nutritional advice. In my case, with the broken knee, the nutritional sort of aspect that I feel was missing from my advice and treatment surrounding that is, if you do a little bit of research online, you know, how to help with the recovery from a break or an injury like the broken kneecap that I've got, is there's a lot of information out there, and it's largely food based. It's increase certain vitamins that help with the reproduction of your bones, and like, you've got to increase your calorie intake by like twice as much, things like this, so as your body has enough fuel and energy to be doing all of this amazing healing that it does when you're fast asleep. But you don't hear about the doctors, you know, take your tramadol, have your tramadol, and I'll see you in 6 weeks. That's been my sort of experience of it. I heard a quote a while back from the Greek physician Hippocrates. Might have heard of him, pretty famous bloke. "Let food be thy medicine, and let medicine be thy food." And I guess that's that's kind of how my family operates, which is, it's how I've been brought up. So that's why I could never understand the lack of nutritional advice coming from doctors. So I thought, flip it, I'll do some research and find out like why that is. And what I've come to learn is that in medical school, it varies depending on which country you live in, but an undergraduate medical degree, sort of, you know, 4 years at least to complete, and during those 4 years, the students are given kind of between 1 and 5 lectures on the basics of nutrition, and I've heard from interviews of doctors online and stuff that what they learn in those few lectures about nutrition is the very basics. It's like, so there's vitamin A, there's vitamin B, there's vitamin C, you know, alphabetical order. You look them up if you like. It's of course I don't know because I haven't experienced it, but from what I've been learning online is that, I used to live with a junior doctor, and I was curious and asked her about that too, and she said, you know, it's very minimal what we learn about nutrition. And so of course this is sparking my, you know, this is sparking my curiosity like nothing else. I'm just going, why the heck is it so minimal? Why are doctors not taught about the relationship between nutrition and health? Like, it was just beyond me. And so now I'm thinking, okay, so they're legal drug salespeople who have been educated by a system that has taught them to prescribe as much as they can. And we'll get into that a little bit later. But another question I had is, okay, who pays for these drugs? Because I go to the pharmacy after I was released from the hospital and bought a third of the prescribed drugs because I didn't think it was really necessary to buy like 9 different drugs to take each day. But anyway, it only cost me about $5 or whatever. It's a minimal amount, and who subsidizes those drugs? The answer is the flipping taxpayers. Like, the taxpayers pay for it. It's the business model is basically, all right, we'll get, you know, some of the most highly respected and trusted people in society, doctors, to be our salespeople, and that way everyone's going to believe what they say and do exactly as they ask, of course, without question, and we'll make the drugs affordable. We'll make our product affordable by getting everyone to pay for them through taxes. That way, every taxpayer is our customer. Like, it's such a good business model. It's you know, that's pretty evil, but you have to admit it's a bloody good business model. Another interesting thing I came across was that in the late 1800s and early 1900s, like, there were so many different types of medical schools. There were homeopathic medical schools, naturopathic medical schools, eclectic herbal medical schools. Like, there was no one way of doing things. There was many ways. And the wild part about that is that in the history of humans and our evolution, this was just yesterday, you know, the start of the 1900s, just a second ago. And anyway, at this this point in history, two groups, the Rockefeller Group and the Carnegie Group, two massive, you know, tycoon giants, pharmaceutical companies, decided that they'd come together, which is, you know, two rivals coming together. It's a pretty big deal, and they decided that they'd basically reform medical education in America. And this reformation of the medical system in America then, of course, turned modern medicine into what it is today and impacted, you know, nearly the whole world by almost... I look at it as almost a religion. It's like turned... It's like converting everyone to the religion of pills, or believing there is only one way of doing things. Because back then, before this convergence happened, before this overhaul, there were different types of medicine that treated everything, different types of things, Whereas today, there's one type of, you know, accepted medicine, and other styles of healing and medicine is kind of, it's labeled alternative. You know, if you're going to get some homeopathic remedies, it's pretty alternative. The accepted thing to do is head to your doctor. And it carries almost a negative or wacky sort of connotation as well, doesn't it? Alternative, it's like, yeah, it's like outcasted, isn't it? It's like the other, it's like an us and a them. So this is pretty extreme, right? Like, imagine thinking, okay, let's make it so most people in Western societies think that consuming our patented drugs is the only way to get better, and let's make them forget about all these other types of medicine. Like, how on earth does one go about doing that? Like, it's such a radical idea, it's hard to even conceive of the concept, which is why learning about this type of thing, or this specific thing, is just so mind-blowing. It's like, how did they pull this off? But what they did was they used their money and influence to shut down these medical schools that weren't pushing and prescribing enough chemical drugs manufactured by Rockefeller and Carnegie groups. So the AMA, American Medical Association, who are partnered up with the Rockefeller and Carnegie groups, made it their job to shut down these big homeopathic schools. And these two massive groups started spending hundreds of millions of dollars on medical schools that were teaching drug intensive medicine, like the ones, you know, like the ones we have today, your local doctors. And we all know how it works when, you know, when big corporations support or donate money to politicians and political parties. There's a source which has a vested interest in the outcome. And it's the same with the medical industry. The outcome is going to be what the donor wants it to be. So the drug companies would say to the universities, hey, we're keen to donate a flippin' fuckload of money to your institute. But one of the conditions is that one of our staff is appointed to the board of directors. Just so, you know, just so they know what's happening with their money. And the universities, of course, had to accept this because it was a condition to receiving the donations. It's like, yeah, sure, yeah, okay, you can have a staff on our board of directors, no worries. So then what you've got is universities that are being funded by the drug companies, and staff within the universities who are literally on the payroll of Rockefeller and Carnegie. And in return for the financing, the schools were then required to teach course material that was exclusively drug-oriented, with basic, you can probably hear my dog barking, I'm sorry about that, with practically, you know, no focus on anything natural. And the reason for all of this is, it's basically just corporate greed. Like, these guys were already stinking rich, but they wanted to create like a worldwide monopoly where everyone buys and relies on their drugs, because it doesn't matter how incredibly beneficial or how incredibly effective natural medicine is. If it comes from nature, it can't be patented, it can't be copyrighted. Like, you can't patent the chemical compound of a plant or a herb. And if you could, I'm sure there would be huge corporate companies pushing their amazing natural herbal medicines because they could make billions, but they can't. So this is what's happened. They have to chemically create unique medicines that can be patented. So I have just kind of briefly touched on the tip of the iceberg when it comes to that story or the history behind modern medicine and the way things are done today. And I realized pretty quickly when I was doing the research for it that, oh crap, there's a lot here and I'm in over my head already, and I'm definitely not going to be able to explain it all in one podcast. But I thought I'd at least try and talk a little bit about it, and I hope you found it interesting. And yeah, I hope you're enjoying the podcast so far. I really do. I hope you've learnt something today. Hopefully, that's the goal. Make some progress. If you have enjoyed the podcast, then one thing you could do to help me towards my all time goal of 20 followers is click that subscribe button or leave a review or recommend it to a mate of yours who might be interested. And yeah, fuck it, that would really help me out. But essentially I'm just doing this for the hell of it, and I don't really know where we're going with this, and I don't know where it's gonna take us, but the only real failing is to not try. So here we are, giving it a crack. Oh, actually, another thing that I wanted to talk about was, I was kind of ranting to Dad the other day. Here's the thing, right? I can't help putting myself or thinking about what this situation would be like for someone else. So I'm in this really sort of, I'm in this lucky position where I've got my mum works from home. She can, you know, it affects her working day, but she can make me lunch or, you know, help me with whatever I need to do in my disabled state. But I can't help thinking outside of that and going, what if I didn't have this support, and what if I didn't have like the emotional support from friends and family and people who care about me, who flick me a message and say, hey man, what's going on, how are you doing? Like, if I didn't have that, and if I was already in not a very good state mentally, then this situation could really, like, it could actually fuck you up. Like, what if I didn't have anyone to look after me, or to, you know, if I lived by myself? Like, I live in Auckland, and I study there. I've just moved home because of the injury, because I can't even cook a meal, because, you know, I'm on the crutches or whatever, and you can't do anything on those bloody things. But what if I was living by myself and I was taking the prescribed amount of these drugs, so, you know, 9 different drugs every day, boom, 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 swallowing it all, experiencing all of these side effects, like crazy side effects. I thought I was going mental, like I thought I was literally going crazy. And without people there to tell me it's all good and that it's okay and that I'm not going mental, it's just the side effects of the drugs, then you could convince yourself that you were going crazy. Or you could, like I said before, the tramadol, one of the side effects is literally suicidal tendencies. And so back to why was I angry? I was angry because every interaction I've had with the healthcare industry, no one has ever even asked me, like, how are you doing? Or are you okay? Or how are you doing emotionally or mentally? I guess what I'm trying to say is there just doesn't seem to be enough kind of care or responsibility taken from the medical perspective of how is their client doing, what's going on for them in their personal life. Like, if I had a history of suicidal tendencies and mental health problems, then being in this position, not being able to make a bowl of cereal for myself or take a shit without the bloody stool in there for my leg to go on, And I know you could argue that it's really not their responsibility because, you know, toughen up, that's your own shit to deal with. But at the same time, I do think that they could really help out a lot of people who are in worse situations than I am, who don't have parents who are willing or able to, you know, help them out or take them under their wing while they recover from an injury or whatever. Even if all they did was just check in with you and make sure that you're mentally stable, you're okay emotionally, then, like, that would be a massive improvement on what's going on at the moment, because from my experience, no one really seems to, you know, to really give a crap. They just want to, you know, I don't know, prescribe you drugs and whatever else. But like I said at the start of this podcast, this is strictly my take on things and my opinion based on the experiences that I've had. And some of you will disagree or whatever, and that's all good. That's all part of the process. Anyway, let me know what you thought about this week's podcast. If you thought it was good, let me know. If you thought it was shit, I guess let me know too, and I'll try and do better next week. Feel free to message me on Instagram at the Progression Podcast. I'll be happy to answer any questions, or I'd love to hear some topic suggestions. You know, what do you want me to talk about? And we can take it from there. I'll leave you guys off for now. I think that's probably enough listening to me rant about things for 1 week. And I'll let you get on with the rest of your day, whatever you have planned. I hope you have a splendid day or a morning or afternoon or whatever you've got going on in your life. And if you did enjoy the podcast, you know, leave a review. Recommend it to a friend, all those good things. And I look forward to talking to you guys next week.